Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In this Scraps episode, you'll hear Melissa Locke interview Lindsay Walls as part of our Art of Togethering conversation. You can find more from Lindsay in our podcast, The Art of Togethering, Togethering Through Hard Things.
Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah. We've been welcoming different artists each week to help us explore this art of togethering, as you know. Mm-hmm. And Fabric is always wondering how to do this together thing better.
Yeah.
And art really has opened it up. You know, we know art opens us up in ways that words and thinking can't.
Absolutely.
So each week we're enjoying learning a little bit more of the background of our artists. So yeah. I wanted to ask you some questions.
Absolutely.
Are you ready for more?
Take it away.
Okay. So first, you know, we've had tap dancers, we've had improv artists, and I asked them, how do you describe yourself as an artist? I'm going to ask you the same question. Like, how do you describe yourself or think of yourself as an artist?
It's a question I continue to struggle with. I'll just be honest about that.
Yeah.
My introduction to art was through my hard thing as like a thing that I do. Like before it was just maybe a thing that on my good days I dabbled with or something, but then it became a thing that I did as almost like a journaling activity and a practice of inner reflection and external like processing. And so the term artist still has a whole lot of hangups for me. And so when I see that term describing me, I'm like, well, that's not me. I'm not like good at it, or I'm not a professional. Like there's all kinds of stuff that comes with that label that I think like, and I think it's also something that like there's a lot of stuff that people might assume about me as a human, like if I like lead with artists. So like I have other identities that are just much more like resonant for me. Like I'm a youth worker, I'm a leader, I'm a wife, other things that like, yeah, that's me. But when people say artist, I'm like, I'm not. Mm-hmm. and at the same time, I started an organization that wanted to encourage everyone to own their artistry and own that they can be an artist. And so it's this constant push
pull. Little irony there, right?
It's total irony. Like, but I think that the reason that I started that organization is because I didn't feel like I could do it. I didn't feel like I could be an artist because I wasn't either like super talented, or it didn't come naturally to me, or I didn't continue with it in high school, or whatever the case was. And so like having that space where you could do and be creative despite whatever labels or lack of labels you have, I think was really important. So, and then it became the thing everyone thought I was automatically. And then I was like, oh, I don't actually know.
So it kind of just happened to
you.
Yeah,
it happened to me in a way that was like not expected. And I had to kind of grapple with like, do I want to be this version of what people think I am? Or do I want to just continue to be myself, kind of show up as I am?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So we don't need to label that.
It's true.
But so yet there's art and creativity and space
Absolutely.
To have that.
Yes.
What is it about that for you that feels so life-giving, that has felt life-giving?
Yes.
Honestly, I think you said since you were young, you had this dream. And you said, I followed the breadcrumbs of this dream of opening a creative space for youth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been in you for a long time. So can you tell us, what is it about that?
The space for youth has been in me for a long time. The creative space for youth didn't really come until after I really experienced creativity for myself in this new way. And so it's a nuance that we don't get into in everything that I talk about. But
now we can do it now.
Yeah, exactly. So creativity for me is like, it's really not about what ends up being on the paper. It's more about the process. Like what I just described today, like my process of making this painting was what mattered to me in my creative practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think creativity opens up space for that. Like that not knowing, right? Like I didn't know what was gonna be on that page at the end. It was a white piece of paper. I had nothing pre-planned about it. And I just started using paints and started to make brush strokes.
Can I ask what they said to you? Like, did they just say, here's a white piece of paper, paint?
Or did kind they of, give you, yeah. There was like a little bit of like initial like prompting, like think of a color or think, but mostly like when I lead stuff like that now, it's look at the paintbrushes, whichever one speaks to you, grab it. And then look at the colors, whichever one speaks to you, dip your paintbrush in it, and then just make a mark. And that's okay. Usually like when I
start.
Just start. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
And it's that, you know, the getting something on the white piece of paper is the first step.
That's what seems like the hardest. Like once you've actually gotten yourself in front of a white piece of paper.
And I usually just like do something completely random. And like and then it opens up something for me. And then as I take that next brush stroke, it does something. And then a story comes from within me and onto the page that I'm not expecting. I process things that I didn't even know I needed to process. I start to, like, at the monster painting, one of the things that happened with that was, you know, I was very abstract up until that painting. And then I knew I needed an owl in it. And I came up, let me
teach her. You just knew you needed an owl.
I knew I needed an owl. And so my instructor, if you want to call her that, facilitator, she came up to me and I was like, how do you paint an owl? And she's like, I don't know. How do you paint your owl? And I was like,
so they gave you permission.
Yeah. So it was like, well, okay, you're not going to help me with this. Then I have to figure it out. And like, I have owls on my wrist now as reminders of figuring it out and like creating space to do it your own way and to have the courage to try something new. That like, that one was scary because it's little. It's just this little owl in the painting on this big painting I'd been used to doing big. Abstract, and then I was like, I'm gonna do small and specific.
Wow,
it's a big difference.
Okay, so that to me is a great example of how art transfers to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how often do we walk around like, what's the right way? Tell me how to give me the formula, right?
Yep,
and to have someone communicate that trust to you, like, I don't know, how do you paint an owl?
Exactly,
but,
Yep. And that, like, permission for myself then to, like, I can do it my own way, right? And I know there's an inner knowing that comes with it. Because I really like the owl that showed up, you know? Like, I didn't know how to paint an owl, but then I did it. And, well, hey, cool.
Yeah. And have you ever painted what stuff that you tried and you're like, huh, I'm not as fond of that?
Yes. All the time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just let it be there, and it's okay, because it doesn't matter. And then sometimes you keep messing with it, and more things emerge. And,
okay.
Yeah, layers.
That sounds a little bit about, like, life, too.
Yeah.
So is painting one of your main forms, or experimented with other?
Painting is definitely the primary thing that I do, but I don't do it the way that I used to. I'm a writer too. Like, if I want to process things, I'll just journal and write about whatever I need to. I also just try to, like, I really try to embrace creativity in, like, the most like expansive way. So, like, when I'm doing budgets at work, that I can make a spreadsheet creative, or I can move money around in creative ways, or...
That sounds a little concerning. We're getting creative with our money. No, I'm just kidding.
Not
I know
in that kind of a way, but, like, you know, like, hey, how do we, like, live our values through these dollars?
Seriously.
And turn them, take them from this, like, really static spreadsheet and make them, and turn them into life, and what does that look like?
I mean,
and
when you think about a budget as an expression of your values, it's an incredibly creative,
absolutely,
generative document.
Yep.
I mean, to reframe it that way is powerful.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think for me that where, you know, this idea of artist comes back to is, like, artist says something about, like, the product, or, like, you sell your work, or, you know, like, people just assume that the things that I've created, like, I sell my stuff, or I make stuff for other people.
And if you don't, then why would you do it?
Yeah, and that's not how I operate at all, and I've really come to, like, the idea of creativity is, you know, like, not art, but creativity, because it's that practice, it's the doing of the art, and that's where all of life exists, really. We're all creative. Being creative is a human, like, creating life. We create, like, the universe is creative. And so expanding into that idea of creativity just really, like, makes me feel creative all the time. So I'm not, I don't have to be painting or writing or doing whatever right. somebody might think
how
is.
You show up in a conversation.
Yeah.
Could
exactly.
be you're creating something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What do you think of an idea that we are co-creators with mm-hmm. God or the universe or however we might think about
yeah.
that?
I think that that's true. I've had many, many experiences of, I think my starting Courageous Hearts was a co-created experience. Like, I had thought of it for a long time. I wanted to create this youth center when I was a young person. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
And it lived in my mind and in my heart as something I wanted to do. It made decisions that I made were different because I wanted to do that someday. But then when it actually came into being, it was a like entirely co-creative. I mean, in that, you know, from an existential, universal perspective of, I just spoke it into the world. I wrote a blog. You know, that's how I spoke it
you
into.
Got, you put it. You.
I put
you,
it out into the world.
What did you say earlier? You made a mark.
Yeah.
You started.
I started, and I said, I want to do this thing, and I want this to be a thing that exists in the world, and this is why, and that opened doors, and people started to ask me questions, and I had lunch with people that I never thought I would have had lunch with, and I ended up doing things that just by the nature of that one starting moment created all of these new pathways to starting an organization, and then all of a sudden it was there. And I was like, I don't know how this even happened. And then I got into, like, worry mind, and then I had to, like, how do you keep it open, and how do you... And then the co-creative process kind of, I got in my own way with that, I think, because there was so many things that... just yesterday, we were at 42nd and Cedar, the old location of Courageous Hearts, and we were looking up at the billboards, and I was like, we had a billboard up there. And how that happened is... I can tell you the logical steps that it happened, but there's no reason for that to have happened. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Like, you didn't, when you wrote that blog, you weren't yeah. like, and then 3 months from now, I'm going to have this billboard.
Yeah,
and then
no.
6 months, it's going to be like this, and then.
Yeah, yeah, no, none of that. None of that was in my possible imagination. We ended up having a movie screening at the Riverview, and the person that was in the movie came to Minneapolis to talk about the movie with me. None of that
yeah.
would have been something in my wildest dreams, and it happened. And so there's so many times in my life, and you know, even with the bridge collapse, the things that have happened where I'm like, I did not think of myself as a public speaker. I would never have spoken publicly prior to the bridge collapse. And then everybody wanted to hear from me. And then I learned I had this new skill set.
Yeah.
And so, and it has been something that I kind of just say a prayer before. Like, I have a team. I like the folks that didn't make it that day are part of my team. And I ask them to be with me when I share my story and talk about the bridge and what happened that day and after.
Mm.
And I, you know, I know my story enough to, like, wing it. But I also... I know I'll do better if I've got that extra support to say the right things
you've
that need to be
said. These people at your back, these people
yep.
that you're honoring,
yep.
that you're kind of, do you feel like you're representing in a way?
Absolutely. One of the reasons that I felt like I needed to tell my story in the immediate aftermath was because, like, there's not a good reason why I'm alive. Like, my story does not have a logical, like, oh yeah, obviously you survived that. Like, I was trapped in the river, in my car, and almost drowned. And there's no good reason for me to be here today. And so, like, I know that my story, to some degree, represents so much of those voices that we lost. And I know those folks would want some of what their experience was to be heard, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So if you're listening to the podcast, a couple things, just background.
Yeah.
So Lindsay has shared with us a little this morning that she was on the 35W bridge,
mm-hmm.
driving right in the middle when it yep. collapsed 15 years ago, and has shared, you know, that story a lot of times, and you mm-hmm. can look it up. But mm-hmm. But what we're talking about is, like, the learning that we have from these experiences that we never asked for, probably.
Absolutely. I always say it's the gift I never wanted. Because it's like there is gifts in it. There is like the who I am today. I wouldn't be if it hadn't happened, but I don't want to ask for it back.
Right. Right. You'd never, no one would ever ask. And I mean, all of us have griefs like that. If we can't name them now, we will, you know, we all will.
Yep.
So as Fabric, we try to be supportive of each other in moving through this life in the ups and the downs, all the real stuff.
Yep.
And we're in this unique season together, kind of reflecting even more than usual on how we do this, why we do this. Mm-hmm. And so just before we close, I wondered if you have, like, from your perspective as a creator of community, as a creator of resilience in other people, as a sharer of stories, like, is there something that you would want Fabric to know or own or think about or consider about how we are together, how we can be together?
I think I'll, like, reiterate a little bit of what we talked about this morning in terms of, like, especially when we are going through hard things and there's stress in our lives, like, one of the things that psychology has taught us is that we kind of get into either-or thinking, black and white thinking, and it's so hard to remember the gray. But that is really where life is. And so when we start to notice that we're doing that kind of thinking, or we're judging something one way or the other and kind of not able to get into thinking about the other side, to really take that extra step to take care of ourselves, to take care of each other, to like remind each other to create space for that spectrum in the gray. To remember the nuances, the things we don't know. I think that's so, so important, and to practice that together as a community is really a powerful way to, like, continue. It's like, to me, it's about exercising a muscle, right? Like, it's that muscle of, and the stronger you are individually, the stronger you are together. The stronger we are together, the stronger we are individually. And so I really think that that's a really important thing. And then just, like, just being able to be messy about it. Messiness is where life is. And I think that, like, so often, especially when we get around other people, we want to be all put together and show our best selves and have it all figured out and have the timing right or do the, like, whatever it is. And I say timing because, you know, it's like, you know, putting a production together every week, right?
Yep, and that's a really easy... doing our best and not doing it perfectly today.
Exactly. Yep. And, but yeah, so it's like all of that is where life happens. And if we get so hung up on, like, the way things are supposed to be, you really lose out on the way things are. And I think that sometimes when life hands you something that's really not the way life's supposed to be, you get really, it really opens you up quick. And I think the more that we can just hang in that space together, like, and especially, you know, after the pandemic, that's just everything is like that. And how do we hold on to that?
It's hard to not want shortcuts.
Yes.
Can I please speed through this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I've learned, if you try to go around the hard thing, you will keep going around the hard thing indefinitely. You really have to go through it. And the through it is the shortest way, and it's the hardest way. And and I think that's where, like, sometimes you just gotta just find your way through it and have the machete out to, like, pave the new path, whatever it is.
Have some friends to help chop things out of the way.
Exactly.
Carry you through.
Yep.
Sometimes maybe.
Trust yourself, too. Mm-hmm. Like, when you don't know where the path is, like, finding that, like, rootedness within your own, like, body to know, like, this is what feels good, this is what feels right. Because there's going to be times where the world might say you should make one decision, but you feel like you need to make an entirely different decision, and that's okay too.
I love that thing you said about muscles. Like, it's this is, I mean, you've you've had to practice this when it was really hard.
Yeah.
But this morning you helped us practice when it was actually really fun and easy.
Yeah.
But we got to practice.
Yeah.
And we got
yeah.
a little bit of those reps in.
Yes, exactly.
For when we will need them.
Yep. So. And I totally, like, I'm a person who kind of, I think I freak people out sometimes because I'm like, yes, hard things. Like, I get a little too, I'm like, yes, this is, we can do this. Like, let's uh-huh. do it. And I think that's because I've put in so many reps and in the little ways and the big ways. And I think that the more that we can do that collectively, the better and stronger that we'll be for everything that's up ahead that we can't imagine yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know from experience that you've been around fabric. I've seen you work in the world in your consulting roles and mm-hmm. your coaching roles, and I know you really are present for people in the hard things. And it's not in that way of like, come on, little camper,
no.
you know, buck up. It's that gray with the color, you know,
yeah.
It's all messy. It's all in there yeah. and we're in this together.
Yeah.
So thank
like,
you
have,
for your
have you
work.
Cried today?
Yeah, you like, are an yeah. artist of that.
Thank you.
So
yes.
thank you for creating with us this yeah. morning. And for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks listeners, because you're also creating with us. I'm just holding that and holding the people we're all connected with from the past and
Absolutely.
From our own stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it really feels sacred.
Absolutely. Very
Thank
sacred.
You.
Yeah. Thank you.